Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:43 p.m. and that is Pacific Central Time. And today is February 16th. So I arrived in Dallas last night and greeted by 4 inches of snow on the ground and a population that are not at all used to snowy weather. So the place has completely shut down. And it has resulted in a significant spike in electricity prices up to about $9,000, which is just incredible. But it also helps to highlight just how much the electricity sector is now dependent on renewable sources of energy, because when you get this swell of demand coming for electricity during very cold weather, then you get a demand spike, and then you also get a supply shortfall because wind turbines stop turning when you get weather this cold. So that's obviously an issue for renewables. It helps to just simply bring home the point that they don't always work. When they do work, it's wonderful. You get to have electricity from a source that's not producing any dirty emissions in the locality, so that's certainly to be welcomed. But then when push comes to shove, then they fall down, and that's obviously a problem. But it's something that we seem to be willing to look past, because for the 95% of the time they work fine, and there is balance on and there is base load is insured. But when base load starts to deteriorate, well, then people just seem to be willing to put up with it. Probably means that there'll be increasing demand for generators and home batteries over the coming years, because this intermissibility problem is probably not going away anytime soon. But then when we think about what's happening in terms of government bonds, I think there are a number of different push and pull factors going on here as well. So 10-year Treasury yields are up to almost 1.3%, and this is a very clear sustained breakout in a reasonably dynamic manner. So it does beg the question, how high are yields going to go? Because the number one thing that has worked in the bond markets over the course of the last 40 years has been to buy the dip, and there is absolutely no denying the fact this is a dip. So we have seen yields push up higher now than at any point since the beginning of the pandemic. Now, it is, I think, worth contrasting this kind of performance because with what's happening in the stock market, because some people are thinking that this is about reflation. It's not about reflation. There's this bet that you have to be in bonds you have to be in equities rather than bonds doesn't make a lot of sense. When we look at what's happening in the stock market, let's not focus for a moment on the actual level at which the S&P 500 is trading. It was down a smidgen in here today, but the bigger point is that it is substantially above the peak level that we saw in early 2020. So the stock market has not only priced in that we're getting a reflation, but also that the stay-at-home champions have seen a bringing forward of the eventual transition. That's one of the things that's the argument I've heard repeated so many times now. It's practically received wisdom at this stage that cloud computing was inevitable and the pandemic was the best thing that could possibly have happened for it, and that it pulled forward the adoption of these technologies into real time rather than some point out in the future. But nobody seems to talk at all about the fact that that means that it's going to be even harder for them to grow at that same pace in subsequent years. We're just not at the point in the cycle yet where people are willing to think about what the downside could potentially be, because we're still in a clear uptrend overall, even if we do have a short-term overbought condition. But one thing that is quite different in the stock market is that we get rotation. So small caps are now clearly outperforming, and When we then think about the recovery that we're starting to see in the emerging markets, well, if we just simply look at the MSCI emerging markets, it is clearly broken up and out of what is a very prolonged ranging phase. So, stock market investors have got lots of choices because you can have this argument about value. You can say, well, I may think that some of the gains that we've seen in Tesla can't be repeated in the next year. So perhaps I'll go off and think about how potentially this reflation trade might play out in emerging markets where we have demographics in our favor. I might think about the outlook for small caps as we get more recovery. I might think about the impact that all of this action is having on the dollar. But if I'm a bond investor, well, where do I go? This, I think, is one of the things that is least appreciated. If I don't like the value that I'm currently being presented with in US Treasuries, well, where do I go? Could I go, for example, to the UK? Well, they're in exactly the same situation as the USA is. They borrowed a ton of money in the last 12 months. Yields are extraordinarily low. The majority of developed countries have benefited from this trend that they were ma able to massively increase the size of their debt and yet ended up paying less for it because of the fall off in yields. But that condition is 100% dependent on yields staying low. And then when we think about the high yield bond sector, well, I could perhaps think that with reflation, that perhaps the high yield sector will be under less pressure from defaults, and we are getting a yield here of about 4%. When I think about the spread for high yield, well, then it continues to contract because high yield spreads aren't really going anywhere, or high yield bonds aren't going anywhere, but there is a significant pop higher in treasuries. So the relative value is perhaps still in favor of owning those high yield bonds. If I'm, though, going to look at other sovereigns, every country right now is attempting to devalue their currency. They're all in an environment where they are susceptible to interest rates. Now, when we think about the 10-year yield, it was quite volatile in China today. And, well, I guess, sorry, this is not today. This was a week ago. So it will be interesting to see where China opens up when the bond market starts up again later this week. The reality is that this has been the answer where people have been putting money, that by going to China, where there is the potential for appreciating currencies, then you can pick up your 3%, and perhaps with less risk than in the high yield market. Of course, the high yield market is also currently wholly dependent on this assumption that the Federal Reserve will step in and support the market. That's exactly the same reason why people might buy treasury bonds. It's because they believe that the Federal Reserve will be there to bail them out in the event that things don't go so well. So then the big question is for a bond investor who has done well from buying the dip over the course of the last 30 years, what will be the catalyst to drive demand back into the bond markets? Well, it's not too easy to think about. We do have the scope that the first quarter is going to bring some kinds of inflationary pressures because we're going to get some knock-on effect from the cold blast. So that's going to impact supply chains. There was already And I've only been in Dallas for 24 hours. I've already heard people grumbling about hotels price gouging because there's so much more demand that people anticipate that hotels will have better access to heating than they do in their own homes, so they're just checking in. When we think about the food sector, Well, it's a good thing that these kinds of inclement weather events don't last more than a week because the supermarkets aren't open and they're not getting deliveries, so they can't open. These are the kinds of things and the supply chain problems, they do have long tails and knock-on events, and it's all been going on for a year already, and there are a number of different reasons for it. On the one hand, you might think about the pandemic, so it's more difficult to get things moving around the world. But then we have, for example, this big backlog of ships sitting off the coast of California because dock workers don't want to expose themselves to the potential that they may get the coronavirus. So, they're not even testing people. If anyone on a shift comes down with COVID, then everybody is sent home. So they're not tested for whether they are exposed or not. They're just simply told to go home and they're paid their full wages. And that is creating a massive snarl in the global supply chain because it's the busiest port in the USA. And I've spoken to people who've had great difficulty getting their containers through the port. It would usually be one container every 2 weeks. Now it's one every 3 months, and that's not because of demand of a drop off in demand for their products. It's simply taking that long to get their stuff through the port, which has a knock-on effect for all kinds of businesses. So when we then think about how high can these 10-year yields go? Well, the higher they go, the greater the effect they're going to have. Now, as we come back up towards this 1.5% level, I think everyone can see that that was an area of support between 2012 and 2020, and then it broke down. If the bond yield unwinds all of the decline that we saw as a result of the pandemic in just the same way that the stock market has, it's going to have a meaningful impact on the ability of governments to fund themselves because the cost of servicing the debt is going to balloon. The higher that yield goes, the greater the problem is going to be. And that is not something that anyone seems to be willing to talk about at the present time. So we're seeing that the dollar was a little bit steadier in here today, and not in an especially dynamic manner, but it is holding that 90 area. When we think about the gold price, well, with these problems that governments have, I find it interesting that gold continues to remain weak, and it was down $23 in here today. It's absolutely inevitable that we're going to move towards the. I don't think it's any longer a potential. I just think it's inevitable that we're going to have yield curve control, that they're going to try and control the 10-year yield. And the only question is at what level? Because the higher it goes, the greater the problem it's going to pose for governments. But they're unlikely to do anything to arrest the advance in the yield until there is evidence of a problem. This is by far the most important change that's happened in central bank policy over the course of the last few years. So when we think what's going on, the central banks are no longer predicting. They're waiting for the market to tell them what to do. So as long as we continue to see the stock market steady, if not pushing on to successive new highs, then we're unlikely to see any kind of effort to stop those bond yields rising. The fact is that bond yields are rising everywhere. It was certainly led higher by China, because that was the country that came through the pandemic in best position. But 10-year yields in the UK, for example, are breaking higher. It's another country that saw the cost of servicing the debt decline in 2020 because of the collapse in yields. But that looks like a base formation. When we then think about Australia, for example, where they've embraced quantitative easing for the first time, this also looks like a, if this were a stock, it would look like a base formation completion. This it looks like a base formation completion for the yield, which can be construed as a top formation in terms of prices. When we then think about, for example, the Canadian 10-year. And I am having difficulty remembering what the ticker is for that. But the reality is that no country has been as aggressive in terms of the evolution of the size of the government deficit as the Canadians have. So that also should be putting upward pressure on their yields, and it is. But the one thing that is also worthy of mention here is that the 10-year yield in Canada is pushing through the lows put in between 2016 and 2019. So lots of people have done very well from bonds. Bonds tend to do extremely well when we are in an environment which is uncertain, and they are very reliant on government support. But it's quite likely that bonds are going to sell off until the stock market starts to react. And at that point, we're likely to see the Federal Reserve and perhaps other central banks as well introducing their own versions of yield curve control. And it's at that point we'll start to see, more likely than not, gold also starting to do better. As we look at some of the industrial commodities, copper prices remain really quite firm and pushed on to new highs in here today. Oil prices are also really quite steady, and this continues to look like a bullish environment overall, and it's back up to $63. Natural gas generally does well in cold weather. So it was in positive territory today, but perhaps not in as dynamic a manner as one might anticipate, considering the disruptions that we're seeing from cold weather. When we then think about, well, was there any impact to the renewables because of this situation? The solar sector was down more than the wind sector. In fact, I think wind was in mildly positive territory today. This looks like a consolidation overall, so there is the potential that we are in a process of mean reversion right now for the renewable energy investments. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of the UK and the EU, this question of Northern Ireland was always going to be contentious. One of the primary reasons that Theresa May couldn't agree on a deal with the EU was because she relied on the unionist parties in Northern Ireland for their support in her government. That the majority that then the Conservatives were able to gain freed up the hand of Boris Johnson, and he was able to essentially ditch the Northern Ireland unionists, and that freed his hand so that he could agree to a deal with the EU. But unfortunately, what it means is that the Northern Irish are now in this rather tenuous position. Their union with the UK is not as strong as many there would like. Their relationship with the EU is also not as strong as the other portion of of society might like, and they're coming out with a rather raw deal as a result of the deal that the UK struck with the EU. Nevertheless, the pound is testing the 140 area. Now, it got this high back in 2018, and the last thing the UK wants is a strong currency. So I think it's reasonable at this stage to anticipate we're going to see some efforts by the Bank of England to talk down the currency. And If they do that, well, that is likely to be beneficial for the stock market overall. The FTSE 250 has clearly broken up and higher in dollar terms, and I've listened to an increasing number of people talking about the benefit of investing on a value basis in the UK. When we look at it in local currency terms, it's coming up towards the peak over the course of the last 3 years, and it has almost completely unwound the big decline in early 2020. The UK does have the potential to be more competitive and to create a better position for itself overall, but it's probably also going to require lower interest rates and abundant credit in order to achieve some of those goals. So I do think the most important thing today is the step higher in yields internationally. It brings forward the timing of when we might anticipate some additional efforts to try and suppress them, which would be clearly stimulative for the global economy. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.